Next. Companies shake their moneymakers.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Today wraps up a very important week for U.S. markets. A lot of big companies reported their quarterly earnings, and everyone's looking for signs that the economy is emerging from the recession. So far, so good, if banks are any indication. Earlier this week, J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs announced huge profits, and this morning, Bank of America and Citigroup both posted strong earnings. And that might seem a little strange because banks were bleeding money not so very long ago. David Weiss is chief economist at Standard & Poor's. Thought we'd bring him in to help us explain it. Hi, David.
Hi.
So how are banks suddenly posting multi-billion dollar quarterly profits?
The story differs a little bit from bank to bank, but the main point is they had to take such big losses last year, largely because of the oddities of mark-to-market accounting, that things are looking better this year just by comparison. Also, you have to realize in some cases, for example, Citibank, there were some sales, particularly of the Smith Barney unit, which really accounted for the profits.
So all of those huge write-downs that we saw are paying off for the banks now?
Well, say they're paying off, but what they really did was recognize the losses last year that they're seeing this year and next year. And that's one of the problems with mark-to-market accounting. It makes you take the losses when you're almost at the worst point to survive them.
Oh, so are these profits, are they an accurate representation of how the banks are doing?
Well, overall, over the 3 or 4 year period, they're going to be an accurate representation of what the banks are doing. But frankly, quarter to quarter, you exaggerate the losses when the market really changes its mind about these assets. And then you see an artificial recovery when things get back to normal, like they are doing right now.
I noticed that the banks are still setting aside many millions of dollars for loan losses. Is that going to keep being a problem?
Loan losses are going to continue to be a problem. What they did last year was recognize the losses. This year and next year, they're accruing them. Plus, most of the losses they took last year were because of mortgage-related and securitized finance lending. We're now seeing losses in consumer credit, like credit cards, auto loans, and in commercial real estate that they're having to take now.
David Weiss is chief economist with Standard & Poor's. David, thank you.
Thank you.
And the markets are liking those earnings this Friday. London's FTSE is up 0.25%. Germany's DAX up 0.5%. Tokyo's Nikkei Index stepped up 0.5%. The Jakarta Composite fell sharply shortly after the hotel bombings this morning, but recovered and closed down just 0.5%. U.S. markets closed up yesterday. CIT is scrambling to raise the $2 billion it says it needs to stay afloat. The government turned CIT down for a loan earlier this week. Now the company is looking for a private sector bailout. Another company scrambling for cash is British Airways. The carrier said today it needs to raise almost $1 billion. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
BA plans to raise the money by issuing bonds and by raiding its pension fund. Drastic measures for a company that is clearly in trouble. BA lost $650 million last year, and it revealed today it's lost another $160 million in the first quarter. BA's boss is talking about a fight for survival. Mark Pilling of Airline Business magazine says BA is not in danger of going bust, but the airline depends on business traffic, especially between Europe and the US, and that continues to be the main problem.
I mean, transatlantic is something like, you know, double-digit 20-30% down on some routes. I mean, this is a huge drop in revenue, and therefore it really hits a carrier like BA perhaps disproportionately hard, if you like.
BA faces an additional threat of strike action this summer. BA pilots agreed to a pay cut, but cabin crew and ground staff are resisting further job losses. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Gather.com, the social network where people can make new friends who share their interests. People are talking about today's news at news.gather.com.
Harry Potter is working his usual box office magic. When it opened on Wednesday, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince grossed more than $100 million. That's more than any of the previous films. Mike Spire is news editor at The Wrap. He joins us to talk box office. Hi, Mike. Thanks for coming in.
A real pleasure.
So Harry Potter opened this week. What are we seeing from Harry?
Well, what we're seeing from Harry Potter is what we see from all the Harry Potters, which is pretty much the most predictable blockbuster there is out there. In fact, Warner Brothers moved it to this slot. Usually it opens in the fall. And, of course, it was an easy decision because it was such a huge blockbuster when it opened Wednesday right away.
I mean, I guess everyone's going to be looking at the numbers today as opposed to what it opened with on Wednesday.
Well, what we're seeing exactly with Friday openings is that there's what we call a Twitter effect, which is people are texting each other a lot more on opening days of films than they used to. And what that does is you can see big drops or big rises on Saturday and Sunday. It's not really happening with Harry Potter because that's a movie that's such a huge franchise and kids are going to go no matter what, whether the reviews are good, whether the reviews are bad. But there are movies, we saw it with Bruno, for example, which had a huge Friday opening. And then the next day you saw it dropped 39%. That's unusual for a movie that has such a strong opening. And what we're attributing that to now at the box office is what we call a Twitter effect. Word of mouth is so fast, so intense because of social media that people are making decisions based on Friday. Now, after Friday, studios already can tell how a movie is going to perform.
So how can movie studios kind of capitalize on the Twitter effect? How can they take advantage of it?
I think studios, they need to embrace this. They can't run from it and they can't shun it. They need to be able to say to themselves, first of all, traditional media has not had the best of luck with new media. They
Right.
haven't been able to really cross that transom, market themselves very well. If you see the Harry Potter YouTube site, it's a hit, but I don't think that other studios know how to do that. I don't think other studios will do that with every one of their movies. When it comes to the Twitter effect, since their core audience knows how to use and is familiar with social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter, either weave it into your marketing plan or hire a group of people who kind of know that realm better than traditional media executives, which are the people that usually run movie studios.
Mike Spire is the news editor at The Wrap. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Thanks for joining us.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.